All right, ready to roll.
We're rolling.
All right then, Slappies, let's get some. Let's get a slap a number on this. What is it?
This would be episode number 264. We are well banked ahead of time.
Yes, we are. We're way in the future. It feels good.
Yeah.
So at this point, we might actually be out in California.
Yeah, or on our way home.
Yeah. So yes, so 1, 2, 3 slapper heads, and we're missing one. We have one of us that could not make it today. That's all right. Let's just say the ballet is taking up more of his time than previously. So we are in this is peak season. This is Blackguard peak season. It's funny. I'm still getting these calls. You know, hey, are you guys available? You know, we just need you for a few hours on Paddy's Day. And I understand, you know, that people want to do like a large event to where they can have bands all day, but it doesn't really make sense for, if you're in a band, you can't just show up and play for an hour and say that's you. I mean, a gig takes a fucking day, you know, a good gig takes a day. I'm in performance mode from the night before, ladies. No, I'm ready to just hit the ground running from the. So I get up and I change guitar strings. I need a set list. I need make sure, you know, cables. You just got to make sure that you have all the equipment running and ready and in top form and blah blah. I mean, it's a whole day, and I understand that you know, and maybe I'm just too. Hello.
It's Ben calling.
Yeah.
He just called to bark.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you say that, I think about, because we used to talk about this a lot, because we were so used to this. It was part of our routine, and we didn't really think about the hours involved so much because it was just what we did. But a really good example is the Austin gigs at Fido that we used to do with the way that we had it. Because we would drive home after the show because we just didn't want to bother getting a hotel room because that was more time wasted ultimately. So it was essentially a 16-hour workday for us every time. It was basically like two workdays strung together, meeting each other, driving there, setting up everything, playing the show, breaking it down, and driving home again was 16 hours.
And minimum.
Minimum 16. And that was because we drove home. If we had stayed there with a hotel room, it would have been even longer. That would have been like, you know, a day and a half. Or something. So I mean, it's this is not, you know, just a quick in and out. Sorry.
It can be done. Go ahead, Heidi.
Oh no, I was just going to ask: have you ever had one of those St. Paddy's days where you play like 3 or 4 gigs and you just play an hour or two, mm-hmm. and then you run to the next place and you play?
Many times,
yeah, more often in the early days. For when I first, the first year I was with you, Patrick, that's what you were doing almost every year.
Yeah,
the Houston area, there was like. At least three different shows.
Yeah,
and it was crazy, but it was fun.
Yeah, and coming up, we're actually doing two shows on the 16th. We're playing twice in Dallas on the same day. Then on to College Station for the all day all night Urbanity Extravaganza. So, but in the early days, and again, it was a lot less production. You know, so you could show up and. Plug the amps in and sound check and run, play a show. And then, but what we ran into more often than not was the parking. They never accommodate your parking. They never get, you know, they don't take into consideration what it takes to get through the crowd because they usually have the place roped off. They usually have, you know, just vendors, you know, beer, just shit everywhere. So it takes, just more planning and more the setup is a nightmare. So we kind of pulled the plug on. We did pull the plug on that gorilla setup and tear down because you lose gear. You know, gear gets misplaced or stolen or whatever because you just can't. There's not enough of you, and it doesn't matter what kind of crew you have, and you need to be on it full time. So it's a. Mm-hmm. It can be done. Can definitely be done. But I just think it's hysterical that these people call you up, you know, a couple of weeks before, you know, before March starts, and you know, they're like, hey, you know, and just, whew. So Heidi, how many years have you been playing music?
Oh my gosh.
And keeping in mind that you're only 18 years old.
Gosh.
Shut up, Jen.
Well, I mean, I've been playing music over 30 years.
30 years? Chad, how long have you been playing?
I picked up guitar when I was 16. So 40. I'm 38 years.
70. Yeah. Okay, so again, Heidi, I'm going to go back to you on this. So in your career, in your musical career, this far into your career, are you pleased with where you're at right now?
Yeah, I mean, I had a really unconventional path, but I think that's one of the things that I'm most grateful for, because it allowed me to do all different things. If I had stayed only classical, I never would have, you know, had all the experiences of playing other kinds of music.
Yeah.
And now I'm doing all of it. I'm doing classical to, I don't know, playing with a DJ to playing Irish rock music. So I think, you know, it's made me a really diversified player and teacher. And so as wonkety as it was, I think it turned out really well. I am happy with where I'm at. I'm always working, though. I'm always like trying to improve or trying to seek new things and learn. So, you know, I'm happy with that, too, that I still have that drive, that I haven't been so burnt out or so jaded or so, you know. Yeah, I think I can only be happy. I've been very fortunate.
Yeah. And so Chad, same question. Are you happy where you're at?
Yeah. I mean, is this where I thought I would be when I was 20? Not exactly. But I knew even back then that despite all the struggles and, you know, shortcomings I may encounter moving forward, that I was never going to just walk away from it. There were a couple of moments in my early 30s where I was like, I don't know about this anymore. But ultimately, deep down, I knew that there was really nothing else that was going to make me happy, was making this my life, no matter how difficult it was going to be. I remember having a conversation with my friend Dwight, who's now, you know, I'm still working with him doing web design. He was in the first two bands I was in. He was a member of, he was also a member of Zuzu's Pedals, the band that my friend Brendan was in later. But he asked me, like, we were talking about this kind of thing, like looking forward to it, like what kind of success could we possibly accomplish doing this, and meaning music. And I said, well, I don't care if I'm successful or not. I'm just going to keep doing it, whatever it takes to keep doing it. And he said, so you're going to be like one of those old, you know, 50-year-old guys playing at Dan Electro's, you know, they work at Rock and Robin during the day. And I was like, yeah, that's how he was. And Dwight was like, ugh. And I was like, I don't, what's the alternative? You know, I go to work in some day job that I can't stand or some desk job, you know, and I've done that. I've spent years doing that. I know that I don't want to go back to doing that. I've experienced many years of the alternative. I don't want that again. So this is it tough? Do I make a lot of money? No. Is it worth the struggle? Yes.
Yeah. And with this lifestyle comes, you know, the kind of be your own boss at the same time, but I would prefer the schedule to be playing, you know, 7 days a week if possible. You know, I don't want to play 7 days a week in an empty bar or, you know, playing off an iPad, playing shit that I don't really know or care about. The beautiful thing, one of the most amazing things, and I was, again, another late lesson for me. One of the most amazing things about music to me is you can't master it. You can't even get close. Play all day, all night, all, you know, in every situation, you're never going to be. And then, I'm consciously doing now is I'm just leaving. I'm not touching my phone or the computer in the early part of the day. When I get up, I just unplug and work on, you know, writing and, you know, internalizing you know, or pushing out these ideas through music or lyrics or what, however it is, but just because there's so much content, there's so much, again, we here on Slappercast episode 264, you know, we're just inundated with the, you know, oh, hey, have you seen this guy? Have you seen this? You know, the you can just be overrun with, hey, do it this way. You know, oh, I've unlocked the mystery. I have do the, you know, the only mystery is you are, your capabilities are all here. They're all in here and in here and in, you know, in here, you know, that's all there is. That's, I mean, you can learn other people's techniques and do the thing. I couldn't tell you dominant major seventh scale, you know, I have no music theory whatsoever, but I definitely have original thought and content that I want to put into stuff. So I just kind of just go the way that, you know, spastic, no rhyme, no reason. And I'm so grateful for, you know, not just the band, not just you guys being able to say, all right, fucker, do it again. You know, just, yeah, we'll try that. But there's just not many places that you can take that kind of freewheeling, you know, non-tested, you know, we don't test it on animals. We certainly don't test it. You know, a lot of the times we just kind of throw it out there at a gig and see what happens, you know, and then, all right, that worked. That absolutely didn't. Let's do it. You know, let's refine it.
The analogy that I always come back to, and we've discussed this before many times, it's like we're engaged in a field of research. And it's the big thing. You see scientists who are really passionate about what they do. They are much more, I mean, they're into pursuing answers to the questions they're looking for, but the question is just as exciting as the answer to many scientists, because that's the passion. That's the journey that you're on, is trying to figure these things out. And when you find a solution to one thing, then there's another aspect of that solution that you have to dig into, and the endless permutations of that. And then just science never ends. There is no end to science. Yeah. And I think of music as the same way, because there's so many different, it's a collection of notes and expressions and intonations and all that stuff. But the permutations are, I guess, technically not infinite, but it certainly seems that way. I mean, practically it seems infinite. Cause you're also figuring in personalities and the different ways that everybody expresses things. And it's this massive world that will you never stop learning. You never stop exploring it. And, I see this in all the really great musicians I admire. You people like Steve Lukather. You just see, you know, he's, what is he, like 70 or something now? And he's just, every interview you see him, he's just like, yeah, man. He's always on fire because he loves what he does so much. And that is the kind of, I mean, that's what I really identify with. So that a lot of people who aren't in this don't, I think have a hard time understanding that. They think it's all about, you know, making it, whatever that means. You know, oh, you don't have a record contract, you're not world famous, then, well, you should just give up, right? No, you're completely missing the point of why we got into this in the first place. The people who did get into it for fame, yeah, they're now lawyers or doctors or whatever. Nothing against doctors and lawyers, but if you really want to do it, then you do it. If you're in it for some other kind of more, you know, slightly superficial reason, then you're going to get frustrated and walk away.
Yeah.
And I've seen that happen many times.
Yeah. And I admire the people that run out and go get it. And you know, their career is 5 years old and they're touring the world with blah, blah, blah. You know, I always admire that. Again, Heidi, you were saying that your path was so non-conventional and so original to you, and you know, and probably to anybody else. I mean, so and diverse. You know, I love you know that I kind of did I did all the background work first, not on purpose, but you know, I did all the local stuff first. You know, family and did all that. You know, now it's kind of, now that you know my kids are grown, I'm free to you know, the calendar and the road are wide open. And so I love that part of it. The part that I would change about what I have done, you know, if you could go back and start again, and again, I'll ask you guys the same question. If you could go back to the very beginning, what would you do different about your playing? And I'll tell you right now, I knew I wanted to do it. I knew I wanted to sing. I wanted to write music. I wanted to perform. However, I didn't really do any research into what that entailed. So I kind of just flew, much like I'm doing right now, you know, fly by the seat of your pants. And I wish that I had been I wish I had been diligent in my vocal, you know, journey and my guitar journey. I wish I, you know, because it was kind of like, yeah, I can go biddly, biddly, biddly on the guitar and I can sing a little bit. So I'll just do that. And now with the lessons that I've learned from being on the road for so many years and having you know, run a band for 20 years now, it really would be nice to be that kid again, to learn those chops and learn all those, you know, all the music theory and all that stuff. It'd be lovely to have again. The spot that I'm in right now is I have so much to say with the limited ability I have that I'm going to just continue on this path. Cause it's really fun. Like I say, I'm just every single gig. Somebody asked me, we were in College Station a few weeks back, and a young gentleman asked me, he said, "Do you get nervous before the show?" I said, "Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah." I mean, there's no expletive to highlight how terrified I am before that first note. And I've said it 1,000 times, but he said, "Yeah, you can't tell." I said, "Oh," and I showed him my hand, you know, just terrified, fucking terrified. And we know that we know 90% of the people in there, they're all friends. We've known them for years. We've known their, you know, their families. We've known their, you know, and I still, it was just like walking the plank or, you know, going to the guillotine. So anyways, same question. What would you guys do different?
That is such a hard question for me, because the reason my path was so wonkety, that's just the word of the week right now.
I like that.
I like it. Title.
Yeah. That's just that, and bittersweet are the words that describe my life. The reason was that, you know, my parents, I had great offers when I was a senior in high school. I had an offer to take a scholarship and go to Boston Conservatory for classical violin. And my dream at that time was to go and be in the Boston Pops Orchestra. That's what I wanted to do. And my dad said, "No, you're going to go to school for business. You are not going to be a music geek. I don't want you around those music geeks." and he was a pianist and played bass. He was a great musician, but, you know, their idea of success and a career was not music. That's something you did more as a hobby, unless you were right, some kind of prodigy and you could make $1 million doing it. You know, that was just, they didn't think that would serve me well. So they sent me away to college to do something else. So I did something else. I did keep music going. I had music scholarships. I mean, why not? Why not take advantage of getting a full ride to college? But okay. So let me try to cut it short. I got my business degrees. I had a career in all kinds of PR advertising, 5 years, maybe. Had offers to make tons of money and was driving home listening to the radio and heard the Tchaikovsky violin concerto, burst into tears, got my violin out from under the bed and looked up the next ASU audition. I had 7 weeks and I said, "Well, I'm going to give it a shot." Quit my job, poured everything into that audition, made it, full ride again, did great all through that.
Awesome.
Finished my bachelor's in music, finally. Decided to do the master's. I was married at the time to Nick's dad. So lo and behold, after being told I would never ever get pregnant, I get pregnant in the middle of my master's degree. So then I have to take 4 years doing the master's, whatever. And then most people know Nick's dad and I did not last too much past that. And so then I had a divorce. So then I went back into the workforce doing music at night as much as possible. So then that was like a good 10 years of reforming my life. But that's how, ironically, I started playing for bands, because I couldn't keep up with the classical symphony schedule having a little one. I just couldn't. There was no way. And when I discovered that I could play other styles of music, which was terrifying, I had to learn by ear. I had never done that. I had to meld into a band. I had never done that. I could play. I could play probably anything I tried to, but it was like terrifying. But that's how I got into the Irish music, which led to the country music. And it was great. I had a little guy that would go to bed at what, 7, 8 o'clock. And then I could go out and play music and make the extra money I needed. So that's how that all came about. And I tried to keep my one foot in classical, but how did I go on this tangent? If I could do anything differently, I mean, it may have been to either stay on course no matter what happened around me. But anybody that knows me well knows I have to take care of my family first. I just do. I get divided and I don't regret it. I really don't. But I would have either just stayed the course of, you know, taking certain offers as a classical violinist, or what I really think I would go back to is I would have double majored in the classical, but also like delved into the jazz school at ASU. Because jazz players, man, those are the guys that can really play anything. They have such great chops and the knowledge, and they hear everything. So maybe that's what I would have changed.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I mean, I could go back and do that now, though, right? If I really wanted to.
But, I mean, the beautiful thing about music is, and we've said this 1,000 times too, is it doesn't matter. I mean, if you're sitting there watching that and you say, man, I'd love to play an instrument, it's not too fucking late. I mean, you can do it right this minute. And there's so much, this is a topic for another day, but there's just so much, like, again, the rabbit holes, the infinite rabbit holes that are available to you. There's so many plus and minuses about doing the YouTube thing, but there's just so many of these people have devoted so many thousands of, excuse me, just untold hours of direction on these YouTube, and I'm so appreciative for and it's so honorable that these people do that. They put that stuff up there and they show you how to do this and that. Again, it's just so there's no excuse. You can do it, and your age and your, you know, you just, oh, I've got short fingers too, but you can fucking play guitar, you can play piano, you can do it. There are only excuses holding you back. You can do it, but it's such a rewarding path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even just the novice, even just the living room, the Wonderwall guy, you know, that's just let it go. Just do it. Hit it. So Chad, what would you change?
Just to add before that, let's add to what you were saying. I mean, the hardest part is always the beginning when you're learning a new instrument, because not only like with the guitar, it's literally painful. You're literally dealing with serious pain when you're forming calluses on your fingers for the first time. You just have to get over that hurdle. And once you're, because your brain is going to fight you, you know, learning, I don't want to put my fingers there, I don't care about this chord, you know, but once there will come a time you get over that first hill, and it's like, you can see what's beyond the hill. And then it becomes really not easy, but a lot more exciting and rewarding at that point. But you just have to keep pushing yourself past that first hurdle. What would I change? The thing there's two different points in my history. I could think of slightly different things. Well, actually, in one case, a really different thing. Because when I was, I think, I can't remember how old I was. I think it might have been 10 or 11 years old, where my mom and I went to some friend's house and they had a piano there. And it was like a, an upright piano, and I was really curious about it. So one of these people actually who lived there was a pianist. And so I sat there and they were showing me basic chords and stuff. And I remember just being really, this feels right. You know, like I was just a kid, but this kind of felt natural. But then nothing ever happened after that. You know, I wound up discovering guitar, you know, whatever it was, 6 years later on my own. And piano didn't enter my life again until I was 30. So, and I don't play it enough, but I did when I did start playing piano finally. Yeah, I picked it up pretty quickly. But because I think about you talking about music theory, I don't have much interest in learning it now. And it's hard for me to imagine, even going back to when I was 16, ever really thinking I would need to do that. But if I had started learning piano like at 9 or 10 years old, I would have learned theory. Just if I had taken lessons, you know, the way you take piano lessons, I would have learned theory. So that's a really interesting thing to think about. Like how different would that have been, you know, if I had gotten that kind of start that early. Maybe piano would be my primary instrument instead of bass and guitar. So that's kind of interesting. If I go back to when I was 16, when I actually started playing, the main thing I think I would do differently is just play more, you know, play more shows, to say yes to more opportunities, to seek out more opportunities on my own. Cause that's how it all started, is somebody saying, "Hey, you want to play this gig?" And I said, "Yeah," not even thinking about how freaking terrified I would be when it came down to it, you know?
Oh yeah.
literally hyperventilating before I went on stage.
Yeah.
Anyway, and we've talked about stage nervousness a lot on the show too, and how it is kind of one of your primary fuels as a musician. I think that you wind up channeling it into your performance. Have you experienced this, both of you? I'm wondering, because I noticed is that time I'm remembering when I was at hyperventilating before my very first band performance with Elemental Penguin in high school. As soon as I got on stage on the mic, all of a sudden it's like I felt safe, you know, like I was okay, here I am and I'm in the show. And I've re-experienced that so many times, like when we're in the band, you know, get everything plugged in and we're sound checked, let's go, you know. It's I wouldn't say that the nerves completely disappear, but it's sort of like, here we are, it's like you're in the cockpit, sort of let's just drive. I've heard John Lennon say something similar too, like he always kind of just felt, you know, once I'm on there and my guitar is plugged in, I'm on the mic, I just feel safe, you know. It's like at that point the show kind of takes over, sort of thing. It's interesting that I think that's one of the reasons why I hate waiting to play. Like we get to a gig and we set up and then you've got like 3 hours before you can actually start playing. It's like, ugh, that's the part I don't like.
Yeah, it's I love this topic because it like music, it never ends and it never becomes a. I've seen the bands that are even keel, just no pressure, no fear, no nothing, and a lot of them are a little bit sterile, and I can't as a regular punter watching the show, I don't think I'd be able to notice it, but as a musician, and I notice the nonchalant kind of, I got this, you know, and I respect those players too. And I'd love to be like that. I would love to be so carefree and so even keel that it would not seem to faze me, but I can't hide it too. I can't hit that first chord and be fine. I have to go through the stages of fuck, 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 you know, just panic before. So, but yes, so we do have a lot to get to. We've got a lot of miles to cover. And I do want to say too, a couple of episodes back to, I just found it. I'd seen the replies to some of our past Slapper Cast episodes where people had suggested, I'd ask people what they wanted to hear covers mm-hmm. of, and you know, of course, Kelly Navarro and Kate Scott and Emily Young, you know, a bunch of them had chimed in with some really good stuff, and I just want to say that I just found this, so we need to kind of give it a listen as a band and have a look at some of that stuff. So stay tuned for that. Also, big thanks to all you for tuning in and for your comments and for your questions and your support too. We love hearing from you and can't wait to see you out on the road. This is a big year. We got a lot of big events coming up this year. We got a lot of big unveilings and all that kind of stuff. So I think we should just tap this one on the head and move on to the next episode.
Yes, sir.
You ready? You all ready? All right, fight and shape.
I'm ready.
Yep.
All right.
All right.
Well, listen, we'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for tuning in. And Patreon, we love you. And Heidi, nice to see you. And give our love to the men, all the men, and especially Nick. And we will chat very, very soon.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you all.
Yep.